Welcome to Real Estate Coaching Radio, starring award-winning real estate coaches and number one international best-selling authors, Tim and Julie Harris. Real Estate Coaching Radio is the nation's number one daily radio show for realtors who demand authentic real-time coaching. Get ready for fluff-free, unfiltered, full-strength honesty about what's truly working to get you into action, helping others, and making money now in today's real estate market. Now to our hosts, Tim and Julie Harris.
We're joined today by Kyle Whissel, leader of Whissel Realty, brokered by eXp Realty, ranked number one in San Diego County for the third year in a row, and number five in California by the Wall Street Journal, Zillow, and Trulia. He was also named number one video influencer in North America by BombBomb. Kyle's team closed 374 transactions and over $205 million in 2017. He's a husband, proud father of a beautiful baby girl, and has two pet pigs. In 2014, his wife and he founded Penelope's Purpose, a nonprofit pot-bellied pig rescue. Now, let's welcome Kyle to the call as we join our host, Tim Harris.
So first off, I'd like to thank our show producer, Mr. Tim Ventura, for being able to say pot-belly pig without snickering. So I'll do the snickering for him. Dude, Kyle, what's up with this? Is that the true secret to basically getting people to call you for real estate transactions as pot-belly pigs? Because if it is, man, I'm telling you, everybody in the country is going to be adopting from your rescue. Is that the secret?
Well, I hope they do come adopt from us because we got plenty of pigs ready for adoption.
Do you do the rehab? What my wife and I do French bulldog rescues, and French bulldogs look a lot like potbelly pigs. So, but that aside, what into the rescue do you do?
Rehabilitate and then rehome. So I bought a 5-acre ranch a few years ago just for the rescue. So when people have a pig they don't want anymore, we bring them in, we, you know, take care of whatever issues they might have, and then we ultimately find them a new home. So it's fun. I've always wanted to do something with nonprofit, and I never thought that it would be pigs, but they just kind of found us, and that's what we've been doing ever since.
Oh, dear God, I hope my wife's not listening. She's going to love that idea. How many pigs do you have?
We just adopted two out on Sunday, so we're at 13 at the rescue, and then we have two at our house.
Okay, well, there you go, guys. If you want to tune out now, there's the secret to selling hundreds of millions of dollars in real estate. It's potbelly pigs. Well, you know what? While we're hovering here, so if somebody wants to adopt a potbelly pig from you, and I assume you guys will ship, I mean, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't assume. Do these guys go out of state, or are they just local? How does it work?
We've done it all over the Southwest in the United States. So we're based out of San Diego, California, but we've done stuff into Arizona, Nevada, and all over California. So we'll arrange transport, but moving from the West Coast to the East Coast would be a little bit tough because these guys, usually when we're adopting them out, they're 200, 300 pounds. So throwing them in a plane is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, that's what Julie and I do with French Bulldog Rescue. We call it part of the French Bulldog Underground Railroad. We transpo from one spot to the other. So that's what you're describing. So if somebody wants to adopt one of your potbelly pigs or learn more about your rescue, how can they do it? And then we'll start talking about real estate.
All right. Yeah, because that's kind of what the show is, right? But you know, I love the rescue thing. It's awesome to have a cause. I think, you know, no matter what you're doing in life, we work in an industry where we make a really good living. If you're not doing something to give back, what are you doing, guys? Like, find the cause, find something that's near and dear to your heart and give back. Our rescue is called Penelope's Purpose. So it's just facebook.com/Penelope's Purpose. And so you could see all the pigs on there and see their stories and all that fun stuff.
Though I doubt your main motivation for getting involved with this was basically just for the essentially, you know, positioning and all that. I have to say, of all the clever, I'm going to say this was a side stream benefit of this, but all the clever, smart, in you know, almost genius level ways to get people to really see you as different and special. Talking about this really gives you a sort of a different aura because you're not talking about something that's so hard edged. I mean, a potbelly pig, just the visualization of one makes everybody smile. So I think it's a great idea. You know, again, so congratulations for that. I mean, it has to be something to draw transactions to.
Conversation starter, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
you
well,
go
less
to
for
a
us.
Party and naturally you do real estate. That's already something that's easy to talk about. But then you tell them you rescue potbelly pigs. And I mean, the conversations are endless at that point. So there's definitely some side benefit to it.
Yeah, it's great. It's an awesome way for someone who's an introvert, which I'm guessing you're not an introvert, but it's a great way for an introvert to make friends. So let's talk business.
Absolutely.
You are incredibly successful in San Diego, an incredibly competitive market. I think we've been coaching agents in San Diego for decades, and I have to think, I'm sure, I don't know, I would be interested to know what Julie's opinion was on this, but I bet you San Diego has to be one of the top three most competitive markets in the country, more competitive than even LA or like Seattle or Miami. I mean, San Diego, you have so many phenomenal agents down there that are true grinders, agents that are really kicking ass.
Oh,
so
yeah.
What makes you guys different? Why is it that people choose to do business with you at such a huge volume?
I think one of the big things is we have a slogan in our office, which is work hard, play harder. So while we do love to work and we hustle and we do everything we can to earn our money, we love to play at the same time. And we love to make the process of buying a home somewhat of a playful experience for people, because oftentimes it can be one of the most stressful things you've ever been through in your life. And we want to do everything we can to make that process as smooth as humanly possible and have fun in the process of doing it, because far too many people go through this process and when it's over, they're just like, they're completely numb to the experience. They hated it. They never want to go through it again. I'm never moving. Like, we don't want that experience. We want them to have so much fun. We want to throw a big party for them when the transaction closes. We want to celebrate the awesome experience that we just went through together. And we look at it as an experience we're going through together. It's not their experience. It's not our experience. It's collectively our experience.
So are you guys, of all the units, you know, you sell 100 units, how many of those are buyers versus sellers? Are you prominently on one side or the other?
We're getting close to 50-50 now. So traditionally, like in the beginning, we were running probably 3 buyers to every 1 seller, but we're almost approaching 50-50 now. So because we've done so many buyers over the years, now a lot of those buyers are coming back around. They're selling homes with us. So we're getting close to 50-50, which is something I've never experience before, but it's pretty awesome to do that. And now all those listings that are coming back around, you know, from people that bought with us 4 or 5 years ago, they're things, and now those listings are bringing in additional buyers, and it's just a beautiful cycle that we're in.
So are you, now I'm on your website right now, and I'm, I don't know if this is your main website or not, but do you have, you're an independent broker, correct? You're not associated with anybody? You're your own shop?
We just moved. I've been independent for over 10 years. We literally just moved over to eXp Realty about a month ago. So we're still in the process of updating websites and forms and all of that stuff. But yeah, I've been independent since day one. I've never worked for a broker. And when we started with eXp, I literally had to call the broker and say, other than calling you right now, like, when do I call you? Like, what do you do? I don't even know. It's like the weirdest thing in the world, because I've never worked for a brokerage in my entire life.
They don't really do anything, really. I mean, a broker, the office manager does all
right.
The work. Yeah, that's the truth.
Right.
So why did you decide to join eXp after being independent for a decade?
A couple of reasons. One, there's this allure when you're independent that you're going to build up this massive brokerage and then you're going to end up selling it for millions and millions of dollars. But in reality, that's a big mirage. What ends up happening, and I've gone through the process, I had 5 companies in the last year approach me about purchasing me, big brands, small brands. And the way the process works is they're going to take whatever your net income is, or EBITDA is what they refer to it as. They're going to take that net income. Then most of the time, they're going to take your production out of it. Most people who are running brokerages or teamerages, which is like a team brokerage hybrid, once you take the team leader or broker's production out of it, there's very, very little profit left, if any. Most of the time, the team is covering the expenses, and then the broker, their production is the profit. But let's just assume that's not the case for you, and you actually did net $1 million exclusive of your production. So they're going to take that $1 million, they're going to add a multiplier to it, usually 3 to 5 times. So let's just shoot in the middle at 4. So now they're going to say, great, Kyle, we're going to come in, we're going to buy your company for $4 million. And you're like, awesome, this is this big payday I've always waited for. But they're not going to just give you $4 million and you get to walk away. They're going to maybe give you $1 million up front. And they're going to say, here's $1 million, you got to stay on for 3 years to earn the additional $3 million. We'll give you $1 million a year. But we're not going to just give you the $1 million. You're going to have to hit certain benchmarks. So you've got to retain X amount of agents. You've got to retain X amount of production. Then we'll give you the money. Oh, and by the way, you now have a split with us. So you're on a 90-10 split. So now you got to give 10% of your personal commission back to us as well. So at the end of the day, nobody ever hits all those benchmarks. You're lucky if you get half the $4 million that you thought you were going to get. And in the process, you know, I did $1 million in GCI myself last year. So now I'm giving them $100,000 a year back off of my own production. There's no point. It's really not worth it. So that whole big sexy selling your independent brokerage is not all that it appears to be. So that was a big part of it. And then the second,
No, I was going to say, thank you for saying that. I mean, we've been saying this for years. I know you listened to Julie and I on our show for a long time. And we've been telling people that the whole team thing, for the most part, if your idea of the largest percentage of profit, you said it right at the top. You said most teams basically, essentially, whether they know it or not, their overhead is going to be hopefully covered by the buyer's agents and whatnot that are generating hopefully enough transactions to cover that cost. And the only profit is going to be coming from your own personal transactions, which flies in the face of the illusion that you're going to have some big team and not have to sell anymore. You could have some big team and not have to sell anymore, but your profit margin is going to suck because you're going to have to give all the money away to pay all the people to do all the work. So you kind of have this big circle. That's the reason. And I can tell, Kyle, from what you said, that's the reason we encourage people from day one to focus on being listing agents. Because when you're a listing agent, you can run just huge amounts of transactions for virtually with maybe two or three assistants and have all your the profit margins are 70, 80, 90%. There was, I forget his name. Actually, you're on the Real Trends list. Aren't you the number one agent and number one team in all California, right?
Number one in San Diego County, number five in the state.
Okay, so that's Wall Street Journal. So Real Trends, Steve Murray. Okay, so we had him on the show, and he and I were talking about this very thing. And he said, and you already know this, I can tell, he said most brokerages make less than 3% before expenses. So they're, you know, you can do that math. And the most teams, he didn't have real numbers on it because we were talking about basically the number of teams that have actually successfully sold, which he said the teams are just starting to sell, but the math works out exactly like what you just said. So most times it's not even worth selling. But most teams before expenses, before paying overheads, are hovering around barely double digits. So they're making 9 to 10%. No one talks about the reality of these big expensive teams. And if you really drill down on it, guys, 99.9% of you listening right now, if your goal is to make profit and with that profit reinvest and, I don't know, start a, you know, a pig rescue, you're not going to do it if you try to build a team. And he's in San Diego where his average sale price is at least, I have to think, 800,000, 900,000. So if he can't do it, chances are you guys need to seriously put pen to paper before you start falling for that, you know, fantasy of basically sitting on the beach picking lint out of your belly button thinking you're going to have all these minions selling for you. Okay, I'm off my soapbox now. What were you about to say? Sorry.
So the second half of it is, one, that payday that you think is there is not really there. The mm-hmm. second half of it is, while we try to tell ourselves in our head that, you know, being a broker, it's not that much work. There's not that many issues that come up I have to deal with, but that's nonsense. I mean, literally right now, we made the move, but I've got four things lingering. I've got an ethics violation I'm dealing with. I've got a transaction where the buyer sent their funds into escrow, and then all of a sudden this code compliance issue came up, and the buyer can't get their funds out, and the seller doesn't want to sign off letting the buyer get their funds out. So I got to get an attorney involved to scare the crap out of this guy to get the money out. I've got two Department of Real Estate investigations that are going on for things that I had nothing to do with, that my agents did. Like, that's the kind of crap you got to deal with as a broker. And it's not just the time. Like, everybody thinks about, like, the cost. Okay, cool, I'll just call E&O. Or they think about the time. Like, it's cool. Like, I got to meet with the agents for a couple hours. It's more the bandwidth, the mental bandwidth, and the distraction that it causes to your business. And it just completely takes you off course. And that's the stuff I don't want to deal with that anymore. I want to focus my time on helping my agents be as successful as possible and going out and selling as many homes as possible. I don't want to deal with any of that crap anymore. And I get to save a ton of money in the process too, because now I don't have to go pay for workers' comp, which in California, you've got to pay for workers' comp, not only for your employees, but your agents as well. So I had a $15,000 a year workers' comp bill. That's almost nothing now. I was paying $13,000 a year in E&O. Now I got to pay $500. So like I'm saving a ton of money off of all that stuff. And then there's a lot of tech and tools they provide over at eXp that's, you know, going to save me another $10,000 or $20,000 with all that stuff too. So I get to save a ton of money. I get to take a lot of stress and headache and bandwidth consuming stuff off of my plate and just go out there and sell more homes.
I've heard a lot of good things about eXp, by the way. I know you're not alone. There's a lot of people that are making the same move. And I'll tell you what's more is there is absolutely a movement to basically move away from big teams. You listen to our podcast, some of the most successful. And by successful, I sometimes mean number of units sold. I sometimes mean amount dollar volume. But what I really mean is agents making the most profit. They don't have teams. And sometimes it's interesting. I'll have them on. There's a gal who I'm trying to remember her name. I'll remember it in a second. It's just a brilliant gal. She's like the ambassador for all of Prudential, Jade Mills. And she was on our podcast. And I asked her about the teams thing. And, you know, she didn't know what questions I was going to ask. And she knows teams right now are in vogue. And everyone likes to talk about it. It's the trendy thing. It's like Facebook ads were a couple years ago, you know. And she didn't say anything. It was like this little pause. And I'm thinking, did she drop? Is she there? Is there a technical problem? And she goes, I don't have a team. She said, I never had a team. I have like two or three assistants that work for me. And I focus on listings and I don't need a team. And I said, and then, you know, she's the ambassador. And so she's a nice, you know. She's being careful what she says. I'm the exact opposite. So I asked her, why is it that you are, why do people form teams nowadays? And then we had this very interesting conversation about how most agents are doing it out of ego. They're doing it because they think they're supposed to look big and they're supposed to have all these ego thoughts, and they're not focusing on what the whole purpose of this business is, which is being of service to other people and making a profit. And with that profit, you reinvest, and with that money, you get rich. And what you're describing is what I hope and I pray every single person listening, 130 some thousand that are listening over, will listen and replay as well. I hope they're understanding that the point of this business, guys, is to do exactly that. Like Kyle said, be of service to other folks, focus on delivering an incredibly, you know, high level product. And then when you do that, you will have profit. And with that profit, you reinvest it. You're not going to get rich from selling real estate. You're going to get rich from the profits you get from selling real estate. How'd I do, Kyle?
I love it. I think that was fantastic.
Thank you. I've said it before.
That's what it's all about. And in all honesty, like if I was starting over, and this is advice for, you know, anybody who's listening to this, is I would, if I could do this all over again and just scrap everything and it was day one, I would have me plus probably four or five employees supporting me and just go out there and crush. It's hands down the most profitable model in the industry. You know, building this big team that I've got, this 20 people that I've got on my team, it is a massive amount of work. I mean, if you see me, I'm 36, I already got gray hair and balding. I mean, shoot, it's not for everybody managing all these people. Keeping it lean and mean is honestly the most profitable model.
Yeah, man. And focusing on listings. And dudes, it's probably the stress of the pigs that's wearing you out, just between you and me. All right. So let's talk about lead generation.
Pigs are my relief. I love to be suited up all week and then go roll around in the mud with pigs on the weekend.
So Julie and I are from Ohio originally. We spent some time in different states, your state being one of them. And we live in Texas now. And if I have this vision of telling Texans, and the Texans are always these, just like you picture them, you know, these John Wayne looking cowboy types. We live north of Austin, so we see real Texans. I can just imagine telling a Texan that I have a pet pig that lives in my house. I'm going to do that just to see what they say. That'll be a very interesting experience.
They're going
to
tell you stuff that my wife wouldn't want to hear. They're going to talk about, oh, I raised them, I eat them. Yeah, no, it's kind of different. We don't eat them.
No. So let's talk about lead generators. What are you doing to generate such a high, you know, you're pivoting towards seller. So let's focus on what you're doing to generate seller leads, because that's what these guys are mostly are interested in.
Yeah, open houses by far are our best lead generation source for sellers. So we love being belly to belly with people. That's my strength. Most of the agents on my team, that's our strength. We're not the best phone prospectors in the world, but we're some of the best agents in the world when you get us face to face with somebody. And, you know, when you're on the phone, your whole goal is to call 100, 200, 300 people to get an appointment. and then show up and get belly to belly with somebody. Like, that's a ton of work to get all that data, make all those phone calls, get your butt kicked over and over again to get one appointment to get belly to belly with somebody. That's a lot of work. I would much rather use more of a pull method as opposed to a push method. And I'm going to do an open house and I'm going to go all out and turn it into a big party. And people are going to walk in the door and I'm going to get belly to belly with, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50. A lot of times I've had 100 plus people at our open houses. And now I'm getting belly to belly with that many people that are coming in to me, who by coming into me have already raised their hand expressing that they've got some level of interest in real estate, whether it's to remodel their own home because they're a neighbor and they want to make their home prettier. But to me, neighbors are my favorite. When we do open houses, we have one person at the two agents, myself and one other agent. When somebody walks in, the person at the door, I call them my bouncer. Their job is simply to sign them in and then ask, do you live in the neighborhood? If yes, send to Kyle. If no, send to whichever agent is with me. Because I just want the neighbors, because those neighbors who are the nosy neighbors, the old lady who's been there 100 years and wants to tell you all the stories, or the person that's just there to get ideas about what to do to their home, those are my future clients because they own homes in the neighborhood. I've got an opportunity to build a relationship with them right now. And ultimately, those are going to become sellers for me. So I love the open houses. That's by far our biggest source of generating sellers right now.
Okay, let me pause there. So I heard two things, listeners. I hope you guys are paying attention. Number one, open houses, and you know, you got to choose your open house wisely. A condo behind three gates where they have to know 14 different codes and it's impossible to park, that open house will suck. I'm sure he's choosing open houses that are in mostly residential home communities with lots of places to park. He's signing the crap out of them so they're easy to find. And the other thing you heard him say is they're not just sitting in the back on Facebook, on their computer, saying, go ahead, have a look around, honey. Let me know if you have any questions, like usually happens in an open house. They're actually, he's actually has a system in place to try to basically direct the folks in one of two different directions. And he's pulling out the seller leads. And the script that we teach you guys in Premier, and make sure you're using it, is, oh, by the way, which house in the neighborhood are you thinking about selling? Don't ask if they have a house to sell. Just assume they have a house to sell. And then you'll pull out more leads that way. They'll say, well, it happens. It very so happens that I'm two streets down and we're thinking about putting our house for sale. If you ask them if they have a house for sale, they're going to say no. If you ask them if they live in the neighborhood, they're going to say yes. If you ask them which house in the neighborhood they're thinking about selling, they're going to say yes, and they're going to be surprised you ask. Then they might even give you a time frame. So what's the second biggest lead generator for you?
Let me give my – I love to share what we do with open houses. So I want to just – before we move on.
Sure.
We look at the launch of a open house or the launch of a listing, much like Hollywood looks at the launch of a movie. So – the new Avengers movie is about to come out. It's going to be a big hit. Now, they don't just decide on a Friday, like, oh, today's a good day. Let's just, like, drop this movie and hopefully people come see it. It's a big buildup. They start, you know, months, if not years in advance, building some hype around this particular movie that's coming out. We should do that same thing when we have a new property that's coming out. So when we sign a listing, immediately the first thing we do is go and shoot exterior pictures that are for coming soon campaign. Because the exterior of the house is usually okay. The inside is usually where the house needs a little bit of work. So we go, we shoot the exterior professional photos, just a front shot and a back shot. That's it. Throw that up on Zillow coming soon. That starts to get a list of buyers that are interested in the property. Then when the actual launch week happens, what happens from the time we shoot the photos to launch week, that's when the seller's getting the house already, finishing the recommendations. We have an interior designer who goes through every single property we list, gives the seller all the recommendations of what to do to get the house ready so it shows like a model home. So she comes through, our handyman comes through, finishes any projects, then the photographer comes and does his thing, and then launch week arrived. On Monday, we mail invitations to the open house. These are not
awesome.
A postcard. These are like it's an 8.5 by 11 paper card stock. It's folded in half. It literally looks like a wedding invitation. It's in a bright orange envelope. Orange is our color. And it has a handwritten font on it. Those go out on Monday. There's something people just don't see. Who the hell has ever gotten an invitation to an open house? Sure, they've gotten a postcard telling them about an open house, but who's got an invitation? It really goes a long way with people. I literally just signed a $750,000 listing just because of that invitation. Next up, we start running the social media ads on Tuesday. So we're running on Facebook and Instagram. So that starts on Tuesday. Wednesday, we launch the property. Then it syndicates out to Zillow, Realtor, Trulia, Redfin, all of that stuff. So if anybody's searching on any of the portals, they're seeing it there. Thursday, we have somebody who goes and drops invitations at everybody's door in the neighborhood. We're typically hitting between 250 and 500 doors. Friday, we're calling, texting, and emailing everybody in the neighborhood. Then we do the, finally, we actually do the open house on Friday night for the neighbors. So by the time that open house rolls around, they've got something in the mail, something on their doorstep, they've seen it in their social media feed. If they've searched any portals, they've seen it in those portals, and they've gotten a call and a text and an email. It's insane. People literally come to the open house and are like, I've never seen anything like this before. What you guys do is amazing. And they will just walk in. And when I used to work in retail, it's called a laydown. They just walk in. They're like, I want you to sell my house. Just because they've seen everything that's gone into it just in a one-week time period, they see that we did it for this particular seller. They want us to do it for them. So we do the neighbors only on a Friday night, typically do something like 4 to 6, 5 to 7, something like that. We make it fun. We bring in wine and cheese. I'm getting ready. I got a big listing coming up. We're going to bring in a sushi chef, and we're going to do sushi and sake in one of our listings. So we do something really, really fun that's going to draw everybody in the neighborhood in and give them something to talk about, because we look at neighbors as part of our sales army. So we want to have them come in on a Friday night, tell them every, you know, have them see the house, have them get excited about it, and then go and tell their friends, hey, there's a new house that came up in the neighborhood. You guys need to come check this thing out. They're going to have it open tomorrow. And then we do the public open house on Saturday.
What are you doing with coming soon? There's a lot in California that's very normal that people will, I mean, at what point did these go on the MLS? During this pre-marketing stage, before an open house, do you put it?
It goes on the Wednesday before the open house, and then we don't let anybody show the property until the open house. So a couple of reasons for that. One, it's a lot less of an inconvenience for my seller. So if I activate a listing on Wednesday, somebody's going to want to see it Wednesday at 4 o'clock, Thursday at 10 o'clock, Thursday at 12 o'clock, Thursday at 4 o'clock, Friday. Like, it's a nightmare for the seller. So rather than inconveniencing my seller with a bunch of, you know, onesie, twosie showing, now I can just have all of those people come to the open house. So it's less inconvenience for the seller. And then on the same token, it increases my open house attendance. And the more people there are at an open house, ultimately the more money people think they're going to have to pay for this house, because they're like, oh, this is a super hot property. We better go all in on it. A good story, because stories are important. We had a listing recently where somebody, before they had even seen the property, they'd driven by it between Wednesday and the public open house Saturday, and they wrote an offer for $775. And then they came to the open house on Saturday, and this was easily 100 people at this open house. They saw all these people around, and they heard people buzzing about it. That night, they went back to the house, rewrote the offer at $800,000 because they saw the buzz of everybody that was at the house. And they threw it out there and said, we want 800, but we want a response by tomorrow. And I was like, cool. Told the seller, here you go. Let's take this. Let's run with it. And the great thing is I didn't actually move it depending on the MLS till like Monday. There were no other offers that came in. That was the one and only offer that we had. But because they came to that open house, saw the buzz, it actually got them to raise their offer $25,000. And we didn't even have another offer to go with. It was a beautiful thing.
Centers of influence and past clients. You obviously are doing very well with that. How are you working those?
I do 4 client events a year. I do an Easter egg hunt in the first quarter, a summer kickoff barbecue in the second quarter, a movie night in the third quarter, and a holiday party with Santa in the fourth quarter. So I love doing client events. I do those all the time. And half of it is just giving us a reason to call all of our past clients, because those calls, when it's like, so haven't talked to you in a while, what's new? Like, those are tough calls. But for myself and for my agents, when that call is, hey, I wanted to invite you to this holiday party that we're going to have. It's going to be a blast. We're going to have Santa there. There'll be food and drinks. It's going to be crafts for the kids. It's going to be awesome. I'd love for you guys to come out. Oh, cool. Yeah, we'd love to be out there. So how's everything going in the home? And then you can roll into your, you know, your forward family occupation, recreation dreams. But we are able to use the open of the event so that it's not awkward, and then roll it into our traditional forward script.
Perfect. I'm going to venture a guess. So, beyond that, whatever you're doing as far as lead generation probably almost doesn't even matter, because those two spokes, as we like to call it, are so effective. Am I pretty much correct on that?
Yeah, and I've actually taken it to another level with past clients, because you learn over the years that those are your most important clients. I've even narrowed it down to my top 25 now, too. And this is like a big revelation I've had in the last years. Now I find out my clients, I send them a little survey of all of their favorite things. So an example would be, what's your favorite movie? And why would I want to know their favorite movie? Well, there's this beautiful thing called social media, and people love to vent on there. So if I'm scrolling my feed and I have all my clients on Facebook in a client list, if you guys don't have your clients in their own list on Facebook, you need to do that. I go on there for 5 minutes a day and I just scroll. Let's say I see that one of my clients is, oh, I'm sick in bed, I got the flu, life sucks, can't go to work. That's an opportunity. So now I know their favorite movie. I'm going to hop on my phone and determine first, do they have an iPhone or an Android? So if you have an iPhone, you know it's easy to figure that out. And so let's say I see my client has an iPhone. I'm going to go into iTunes, pull up that favorite movie. I'm going to buy it and send it over to that client and say, hey, I saw you're sick in bed today. Just want to send you your favorite movie to help you get through the day. Like, the stuff that nobody else is doing.
Are you at all doing any prospecting? Only any direct calling if for sale by owners or expireds or doing anything like that?
I don't know.
Okay. So listeners, here's what I want you guys to hear. There are many, many spokes that you can choose from when you're building your lead generation wheel. And Kyle, I'm curious. When you were starting, you've been in the business for a while, but you started basically at the same time Zillow started, right? Back in 2007, 2008. Am I right about that?
Residential, yeah. That's when I got into it. I did commercial for a few years and shifted over to residential. So right around.
Okay, so you start... Did you start out primarily with buyers and dare I say buying buyer leads? Was that part of your lead generation back in the day?
Honestly, I started out with short sales and then
kicked right.
a lot of asset manager butt and then rolled into REO. So I've always been listing heavy. I come from an investor background. I've always struggled with buyers because when I walk into a room and it's got pink carpet and green walls, the buyer's like, oh my God, this is going to be so much work. And I'm like, well, it's $15 a yard for the carpet. And it's, you know, $400 to paint this room, but buyers don't see that way. So I've just never been the best buyer's agent. I've just always been good with the numbers, and that plays well with sellers.
Okay. That makes sense. Would you agree that as a new agent, because we have a lot of new agents listening, would you agree that if they were, a lot of agents get into the business, Kyle, and I'm sure you heard this as well, where they're basically pressured to buy buyer leads. Nobody ever tells them to learn how to become great listing agents. No one ever tells them how to, you know, essentially not ever to build a business that's not dependent on buying their business. What's your mindset on that?
Yeah, I mean, listings is 100% where it's at. Like the beautiful thing, I don't work weekends unless I want to. You know, if I've got a listing appointment or something I need to do on the weekends, I do. If I want to do an open house, I do, but I've got my team that'll do them if I don't want to. So I really get to pick and choose that stuff where if you're buyer heavy, you are working the weekends, period, no matter what. It's not an option, right? You're going to be working the weekends. So I love to have that freedom. I love to spend time with my family, again, work up at my nonprofit. I think there is a ton of pressure to buy buyer leads. And, you know, I think in the beginning, you need to have a balanced business, but don't just think that, oh, I'm new, nobody's going to work with me on the selling side.
That's right.
I think you should go after sellers from day one. Don't wait. Don't think like, oh, I got to be in the business 5 years and then I can start working with sellers. Like you can do that on day one. Nobody's making you wait. And, you know, listings are the key to this business. A study I saw recently showed that the average time it takes to from the time you meet with a buyer to actually closing that transaction, you're putting in close to 30 hours worth of work. Where on the selling side or on the listing side, it's like three. So you're spending 10 times as much time on a buyer as you are on a seller. And a lot of times you're actually making more money on the selling side than you are on the buying side.
Definitely.
Where do you want to be? Do you want to do, like, look at your net profit per hour? That's a term, and you kind of alluded to profit. That's a term that I don't hear people talk about enough is your net profit per hour. Like, I know a gal who does 200-plus transactions a year, $2 million in GCI by herself, and she probably makes a massive amount of money, but she's working 70, 80 hours a week to do it. So when you actually break it down to her net profit per hour, is it really that attractive? Probably not, because she's putting in 80 hours to do it. So if you can run this business efficiently, and listings are the best way to be efficient, you can actually run a lot more profitable business and get that net profit per hour up.
So let's cut that. Let's break through what you said again, because we have to make this basic. So the net profit per hour is a great way of thinking about it, because you're right. When you're working on the buyer side, most of them are probably earning, would earn more money working at Home Depot. And guys, you're not even taking into consideration, those of you who are stuck on buying leads from Zillow and whatnot, you're not even taking into consideration the money you're losing on the buyer leads, the amount of time you're wasting talking with people that aren't really motivated. And then that one buyer who takes 30 hours before they actually buy, that's probably after you've kissed the toes or kissed the butt of probably about 100 of them. So just keep that in mind. And the listings, the reason the listings are better is because they create leverage for you. You can take one listing, and that one listing is generally going to throw off one or two transactions if you work it like Kyle is. And when you have one listing, while you're, you know, petting your pigs at your nonprofit, somebody else is out there basically trying to sell your listing for you. Listings create leverage. Listings make it so that you can have a normal life. And I love the fact that Kyle said this. You can, you do not have to wait to become a listing agent. And I realize that's the paradigm in the business right now. Oh, you've got your real estate license. How much money do you have? Go buy some leads. No, learn how to earn your business, guys, and you will then grow a profitable business. Don't just fall prey to all these people that are trying to sell you the, you know, the easy button, because those folks are, do not have your best interest in mind. They're just, they know that statistically you're not going to be in the business in 2 and 3 years. So, you know, you probably don't have the experience to be able to discern what's going to work and what's not. So Kyle, anything else you'd say, if you're looking back on your incredible career in the past decade, what else would you say? Maybe another, maybe 2 points that you wish you would have known when you gotten that you, you know, someone would have told you 10 years ago.
Really pour into every single client that you get. Don't just treat them as another transaction. Treat them as a relationship. The more relationships you have, the more deals you're going to get, and you can get off the Zillow drug or the realtor.com drug. Those are drugs, and you get addicted to those, and you think you have to stay on them forever. But the better job you do of loving on your clients, providing them an amazing experience, when you do a good job of that, you don't have to pay money anymore. You get to love on clients. You get to hang out with people that, you know, that you like, that you've worked with before. They're going to refer you business. And when you go on that referral appointment, like I just went on a listing that was from Zillow and I had to compete against 6 people. That's a nightmare. And when I go on a referral appointment, I'm competing against nobody. So take amazing care of your clients, because they're going to refer you business for years and years to come. So really make sure you're not a transactional agent. Don't always think about the transaction. Think about the relationship and take a solid relationship from every transaction that you do. I'd say that's by far the most important thing in this business. I'm trying to think of one other piece is also have a plan. So if you are out there on the Zillow drug or something like that, you've got to have a plan of what you're going to do when those leads come in. I see way too many people spending tons of money to generate leads, but they don't have a solid plan in place of what they're going to do when that lead comes in. Or I see people recruiting members onto their team, but they don't have a plan of what. Always have a plan before you invest money into anything, whether you're investing in a new employee or you're investing in a new lead source. Have the plan in place before you bring that person on.
You said earlier, and I think it's really profound, maybe even worth mentioning again, if you had to do it all over again, 10 years, you have all the knowledge you have now, all the experience you have now, would you chase the big team model?
No, I, like I said, if I started all over again, I would just run with 4 or 5 employees. And the beautiful part of employees too is you are allowed legally to tell them what to do, when to do it, and what to wear while they're doing it. You can't legally do any of that with an agent. You can't tell them you have to show up here or you're fired. You could do it, but you're going to get a labor law lawsuit sooner or later. So when everybody's employees, you actually have complete control over their actions, and that can be a beautiful thing. And you'll find employees tend to work harder than independent contractors, because independent contractors know they're independent contractors, and independence to them means I do what I want when I want.
Yeah, I mean, that's the bottom line. I love it. Anything else you'd like to say to these guys as we round the bend? We have an audience from all over the, you know, it's like 99% in the United States. You'll hopefully get some referral business from this. You serve basically all of San Diego, correct?
Yeah, we do all of San Diego County. And I know, don't take this as a pitch at all. I'm the kind of guy where I'm all about jab, 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 right hook. I love giving back into this ecosystem, just like I love giving into my clients. The more I put out there, the more I help people, I know it's going to come back around to me in the long run. I'm more than happy to share, even with my biggest competitors. I love sharing because sharing is caring. And when I share into this ecosystem, I know the ecosystem is going to take care of me in return.
Why do you think that 99% of the people won't do anything with the information you share? That's true. Which, by the way, I agree. So why do you think that's true?
I wish I knew. I'd be a billionaire if I could figure that out. I don't know what it is. I think everybody loves to get the education, but doesn't want to take action on that education. It was funny. We just did a challenge with like my mastermind group, super high level people. And it was like this eating challenge. We had to have 5 salads a week as meals. And if you missed a salad, you had to throw $100 in the pot. And I was like, oh, this is going to be great. There's going to be like a couple $1,000 in the pot. We did this for 13 weeks, 7 people, 5 salads a week. And in 13 weeks, there was 1 salad missed. So the people that are at that higher level, when there's a challenge in front of them, they step up to the plate and they take action immediately. They don't wait. So the longer you wait to take action, the harder it gets. A saying I heard recently is that don't plan to start something tomorrow. Don't plan to start something Monday. Don't plan after your vacation, after the holiday, and don't even plan to start it today. You got to start it right now. So if you're listening to this, the second you hang up is when it starts. Don't wait till later today. Don't wait till tomorrow. It starts right freaking now. And I think that's the thing people need to do is when you hear something, take action immediately. The longer you wait, the less likely you are to do anything with it.
Absolutely. There's a psychology behind that I've read about many times, but I don't really understand it, but you just, encapsulated it perfectly. There's a certain energy that comes and excitement that comes when you hear an idea, and that energy dissipates just as fast as it was manifested in your head if you don't take action on it right away. So listen, listeners, that's the bottom line. You've just heard from one of the nation's top producing agents. He said things that other people aren't willing to say. He's, given it to you from a perspective of experience. This isn't theory. This is a guy that's actually been there, done that more than a few times. And he's got the pigs to prove it. So listeners, there you go. I think this was a good interview because you guys heard somebody reinforcing what we've all been trying to, help you guys understand, that the best business model in our industry is definitely focusing on listings, and the best, as in most profitable business way of running your business, is not having a team, having you as the primary person who's chasing listings, and then having assistants that basically you can delegate the stuff that's not the profitable stuff in your business, not the lead generation, not the pre-qualifying, not the presenting, not the negotiating, not the closing. Delegate all the rest of that stuff. It will save you unbelievable amounts of stress. If you believe, and some of you do, that somehow building a team or a brokerage for that matter is less work than doing what I just said, listen to Kyle. Listen to 99% of the people we have on this podcast. It's not less work. It's more work. It's just different kinds of work. If you think it's less stressful to solve some agent's problem than it is to try to solve some seller's problem, I'm sorry, but that's just not true. And it's less profitable. So guys, the point of this business is to be of service to other people. Remember, listeners, it's all about doing what you don't want to do when you don't want to do it at the highest level. And when you do, you could earn the right to have a brilliant career in life, like our friend Kyle Whistle does. So Kyle, I really appreciate your time on the podcast today. Everyone else, have a fantastic day, and we'll talk with you on the show tomorrow. Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you.
This program has been a presentation by Tim and Julie Harris, Real Estate Coaching. For more information on our real estate coaching and training programs, visit our website at timandjulieharris.com. Remember to tune in weekdays at noon for upcoming shows. And until next time, thank you for listening to Real Estate Coaching Radio with Tim and Julie Harris.